bothers me fucking around and make noise on the tape.
You get a razor blade and I'll cut it off.
Where's the mic? Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel, Carmel, California. Back on Dialogue Conspiracy. This is number 219, May 31st, 1976. It's good to be back on the air again. There's been a time lapse here of several months, quite a few months, since Dialogue Conspiracy was last heard on a regular basis. I went off the air at that time, as many of you know, because of various threats that I was getting, one or several from Sandra Good of the Manson family, by mail and telephone, and members of the White Aryan Brotherhood, who had said that my name was suggested for the People's Court of Retribution, that they were going to take care of me. Other calls were from unknown sources, and at the time I made the decision to go off the air. The decision to resume these broadcasts at this time is no death wish on my part. I obviously feel somewhat safe, or I wouldn't be back on the air on a weekly basis again. I hope to live a full life. I don't want any interruptions or harm from the domestic intelligence agencies. But on the other hand, I've seriously considered and studied history for a long time, and one of the lessons I learned from studying history of the past and other sources of good literature is that silence doesn't necessarily stop murders or conspiracies or oppressions. When you shut up, you don't necessarily satisfy the illegal domestic forces that are working against the best interests of the majority in this country. It didn't work in Germany, it didn't work in Brazil or Greece or South Korea or Chile or any other country that became a military dictatorship. There are many people in the middle that were not committed to finding out what was happening. Dictatorships don't take place overnight. And if those good people were the least bit concerned and had exposed various murders and conspiracies, there may have been a different course in their country. As I say, being off the air didn't solve problems. I did a lot of traveling in the country in the meantime since I've been on last, New York a couple of times, Ohio, several times Sacramento, and around different places. And the last five airplane trips I took, there were large mishaps, and I felt very insecure traveling around this country, and I decided that being off the air didn't protect me anymore. One case, flying to Chicago, the wheel fell off the 707, and they thought the other wheels had fallen off, and they had ambulances and fire engines ready. The last plane I took from Sacramento, the plane dropped 1,000 feet because there was a near collision. There was another plane coming at us, and we dropped 1,000 feet. Another time I was taken off of a plane coming from New York here. My luggage came out, and some gentleman had come up and taken the reservations, and I was just put off with no explanation and had to wait and scream and yell to get a flight back because it was crowded around Christmas time. But there were five continuous mishaps of different sorts, and I decided that just being off KLRB wasn't enough. I had to go 100% consistent with my work or give it up 100%, and I cannot give it up because I feel strongly in what I'm doing. I really believe that an informed citizenry is the only weapon, the most important weapon against oppression, that people have to get information by word of mouth and use their intelligence, and determination is a weapon. North Vietnam couldn't possibly win the war against the mighty United States if they had listened to Dan Rather every night, or Barbara Walters, or Walter Cronkite, or if they sat in their huts and read Time Magazine or the Associated Press, the United Press, stories about the war. We need more than the establishment media telling us what is actually happening in the world. We need alternative newspapers. We need radio stations like KLRB and other stations that carry good news, actual news that's happening that is 180 degrees different than the establishment news media is willing to give out. And we need people giving facts and documentation to spread the word around. We need researchers. Like myself, there's hundreds and hundreds of us working now who've investigated the various assassinations and conspiracies, and you need people to interpret the massive amount of news coming out each day based upon past documents and research. Jean-Paul Sartre wrote, "Man is free to act, but he must also act to be free." Sartre was a great writer, but he gave up his writing in a time period when his country was overthrown, when the Nazis were there, and when his own countrymen were collaborating with the enemy and did active street fighting and then went back to being a writer. The USA today, I believe, consists at the highest level of governments of invaders, identical to Nazi invaders. The intelligence system has taken over every agency, the presidency, the vice presidency, the Office of Management Budget, the Justice Department, the Internal Revenue, the Treasury Department, on down to the local communities. And I feel there are collaborators, like there were in Nazi Germany and in the countries they invaded, who've gone along consistently with these assassinations and conspiracies for 13 years, in the time period that I've studied specifically since President Kennedy was killed November 22, 1963. There are a few statements I want to make about my opinion on the research, and then we'll get on and talk about Martha Mitchell, the new CIA links to the John Kennedy assassination, and if time, a little bit about the burial of Howard Hughes. I do want to make this statement, maybe today for sure, and possibly every broadcast in the near future, that it is important to recognize with all this material coming out that there was a domestic intelligence coup d'etat 13 years ago that has to be overturned at every level. The pieces are falling apart or together, as how you see it, like a puzzle, and the names of the people consistently run through this era from World War II until the present time, and particularly since the Bay of Pigs operation, but they played a major part, these agencies, the FBI and the CIA, in the killing of President Kennedy, in the killing of Senator Kennedy, in the killing of Reverend Martin Luther King, and many, many others, including the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and Howard Hughes. The FBI, the CIA, the Supreme Court, the Justice Department, the White House are not innocent dupes of any low-level conspiracy, whether it's the Cubans or the Mafia or new evidence that's come in the last year that the committees in Washington are investigating that they allege that the Warren Commission didn't have at the time. The Warren Commission published in its 26 volumes of documents and hearings all the evidence that any person needs to lead to where the conspiracies came from in 1963 and where they're still coming from. The whole chain of command, the way they operate and investigate, is all those 26 volumes. And the only reason those volumes were published and sold at the time was because, according to the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings, Alan Dulles said nobody will read it anyway. Another point I want to make is that Gerald Ford is the president of the United States today because he helped cover up the murder of President John Kennedy. He concealed the CIA's involvement in the suppression of evidence. He published in his own book the allegations that Oswald belonged to the FBI, but left out of his book the part of Oswald's number and charges that he was linked to the Central Intelligence Agency. Gerald Ford was a member of the Warren Commission, and it's an election year, and this is important for you to remember when you think about Gerald Ford, that he is the unappointed president running as elected president because he helped cover up the murder of President John Kennedy. Gerald Ford is president of the United States today, and he's running for president again because he went to the Wright Patent Committee in Washington, D.C. at the time of Watergate to conceal the funding of the Watergate, which would go back to the John Kennedy assassination. In a book called The Great Cover-Up by Barry Sussman, there's some quotations here, Richard Nixon suggested the routine lobbying channels be used for his White House congressional liaison staff to go to the Wright Patent Committee to stop the investigation of the Mexican money that paid Gerald Ford and James McCord and G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt. And the man to do that, the liaison man, was House Minority Leader Gerald Ford. The book says that Nixon said this is a big, big play, and he showed how strongly he wanted to block the Patman hearings. Simply make it clear, said Nixon, to the key committee members what the president wants on the Patman committee, and those votes against investigating this should be expected to fall into place. It was Gerald Ford who represented Richard Nixon, who stopped the investigation of the money that went to Watergate and earlier the Mexican money that would be shown to be part of the John Kennedy assassination. It was Gerald Ford who also brought G. Gordon Liddy from New York State to the Treasury Department, and he then became an agent of the CIA, or was earlier, but linked with the CIA, going to them for equipment and His co-worker, E. Howard Hunt, had been with the CIA since the very beginning of its days. Liddy and Mardian, Robert Mardian from the Internal Security, went down the National Archives to witness German Nazi films, Gestapo techniques, and instructions while he was still in the Treasury Department and then as a member of the White House Plumbers Team. Gerald Ford brought Liddy to Washington, where Hunt and Liddy teamed up both inside the White House as special agents of the President of the United States and joined the CIA front across the street at Robert Mullen Associates, which was the account for Howard used dummy funds. Allegedly, $10 million went into that office that has never been investigated for illegal activities that ranged from planned murders to the planned assassination of Richard Nixon at that time, to the planned kidnappings of anti-war protesters and the riots in Miami. All of these links of Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon, J. Edgar Hoover, G. Gordon Liddy, and the whole White House team go to Interpol, that's international police, along with Eagle Crow's links to Interpol, the headquarters of the Gestapo databanks, and Intertel. And we have a very suspicious link to the microfilming of the genealogies going inside the Mormon databanks in Salt Lake City at the present time. I bring this out because right now the headlines are that the CIA had secret money to carry on operations that were responsible or linked now to the killing of John Kennedy in the Cuban community, even after John Kennedy had ordered that those Cuban groups not be funded any longer by the CIA. But that special money comes from these secret organizations such as Mullen Associates, the Howard Hughes money, and Permandex Foundation coming out of Switzerland, so that the Central Intelligence Agency could cut off funds to the Cubans. But the funds kept going to the Cuban committee because the CIA dummy fronts made sure that they went to these people. I went back on the air at this time because the links of these people, their names, their associations, and their funds are directly linked to our next presidential elections, to our candidates, our Justice Department, the Internal Revenue, our present congressmen. And so for the weeks to come, I will be making continuously links of these men to these organizations. I sincerely believe that time is running out for Americans to look back upon these days since World War II with any memory of what the United States was like before World War II. The CIA has a laboratory and methods and facilities to spread germ warfare inside the USA, and I don't have any doubt that they will be doing this on certain test cities. They have the ability to operate on the brain, to alter your minds, to erase your memories at very volatile moments, or even currently at the present time if they want to. They make personality changes. They can create a second person inside of an agent's head, so one does acts and the other one is not participating in them, like Three Faces of Eve. There's an article this month in June, Playgirl, about Candy Jones and the second personality the CIA created for her in 1960. That many years ago, and there are two personalities, her real person and the other one would talk to each other, and one was indoctrinated with racism and programmed to hate minorities and go against the things that our Constitution and America stand for, funded by our tax dollars to the CIA. Can one person stop these things? No, I can't stop all this. But I believe that many people can do it, and there's many people doing research. And the important thing for you is to get this material out. A lot of you did that when I was on the air regularly. A lot of you continued it while I was off, and I would get mail and telephone calls of that effect. You can take tapes of these shows. You can take reel-to-reel or cassettes. You can carry the message to friends or relative, family, send it out, have them make duplicates. While there's any life in us in the United States, I sincerely feel that we have to take a position and fight back. To run away from it is to die. To ignore it is to commit suicide. To protect the agencies and their men, this is from the president on down, is to be a collaborationist. There is a war going on. The election and government are in the hands of people who had usurped the power ever since John Kennedy was killed. They have to be treated seriously and with determination and swiftly. And that is why I decided to go back on the air, because I think there are enough people now that are concerned, that want to keep up with the daily news to keep this thing going. Well, Martha Mitchell is dead. She died this morning, May 31st, 1976. One of the reasons I wanted to go back in the air and just made the decision last week is that I knew Martha Mitchell was dying. And I was so outraged at what happened to her, just like I was outraged at the death of Jack Ruby, that I wanted to express it, hopefully, before she died, but she did die this morning. Exactly 4 years, less 18 days, since the Watergate affair broke in the open. Martha's death is our death. We allow these things to happen. We condone her kidnapping by remaining silent. The nation sat silent while those fools in Washington injected her. They murdered her the same way as they did Jack Ruby, and Martha Mitchell and Jack Ruby had a lot in common. First of all, they had Leon Jaworski in common, and they had Gerald Ford in common. Gerald Ford and Leon Jaworski saw Jack Ruby in Dallas, Texas, in July 1964, when he begged for them to protect him, and he would tell them about the plan to overthrow the government and the role that he had in it, and they wouldn't protect him, and Jack Ruby said, "Then I'll be killed if you don't protect me," and they left the room and said, "We have to leave now," and they would not take his testimony, and he was killed. He died of a 3-week cancer. Ruby wanted physical protection so they wouldn't be killed in jail. He wasn't allowed that. Ruby's CIA friend, David Ferry, was one of many, many who was working on mice and cancer research along these lines in his own apartment, much less in these laboratories, about cancer and causing human cancer. Gerald Ford, a member of the Warren Commission, concealed the assassins of President Kennedy, as I say, going to the Patent Committee, and Leon Jaworski never called Martha Mitchell when he was special prosecutor to use her testimony of the Watergate. He concealed what Ruby knew, and he concealed what Martha Mitchell knew. Ruby's sister came to see him, and he was bloated up and had injections, and very shortly after, completely isolated and not allowed to see anybody except certain persons who kept the record going that there was no conspiracy at the moment of death with a microphone on his neck. Jack Ruby was isolated. Martha Mitchell was isolated. Their old buddies were never around them, and they were both dead and silenced forever. I realized the potential of the CIA for the last 4 or 5 years, the injections, the drugs, a lot that's been coming out in the Senate hearings about MK Ultra, the mind-altering drugs, the drugs they put into people's drinks when they sit at bars and then take them somewhere and photograph them, people that jumped out of windows, commit suicide, got epilepsy, change their personalities. I've known about these things because I've been researching them for a while. And at the time of the Watergate, I wrote for The Realist the article, "Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?" This article was dated July 11, 1972, and I'm going to read the sections today because it was just 4 years ago that I was writing this article about Martha Mitchell, and it was the first published account in the world linking the people involved, John Kennedy's murder, to the Watergate affair and bringing the CIA and John Mitchell into the Watergate affair. I began by saying that John Kennedy wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it into the wind, but the same people on the CIA team that were active in the Bay of Pigs operation, the training, the planning, the financing, were a strong team 11 years later at the Watergate Hotel. And I said the decision-making organization of the CIA was tampering then with the electoral process one more time. Martha Mitchell, I wrote, made her debut in Washington with sarcasms about war protesters. They reminded her of Russian revolutionaries, and she would get on the telephone. You can read her obituaries in the paper about her various records and famous telephone conversations she made about the left in the country when she and John Mitchell were reigning supreme and her husband was attorney general. I said 3 years later, Martha wishes that the same youth would come to her aid, because 3 weeks after the arrest at Watergate Hotel, she had already been isolated and kidnapped. I said when President Nixon had a press conference a few days after Mrs. Mitchell was taken prisoner, she complained that nobody asked about me. She broke the story of Watergate, but nobody in the press wanted to know about Martha. The youth of America had tried to tell Martha Mitchell earlier that the president does not listen to any voices except a few. So why at this time would he care about Martha's problems? There was a smug complacence about the John Mitchell family in the days when he had promised this country it was going so far right we wouldn't recognize it. Those were the carefree days when John and Martha were not caught in the bending process. But did John Mitchell, one of the dirtiest, meanest men in political history, expose his little sweetheart to espionage agents doing some kinds of dirty work and distasteful acts? At what point did Martha have to be removed, silenced, and totally discredited? The political princess, who once was cleared for classified material and worked for the Army Chemical Corps, suddenly was turned by the news media into a negligent, selfish mother who let her son's teeth rot. From now on, Martha will be getting the Dita beard treatment, I said, with visits from the Army doctors and the psychiatrists. I wrote this 4 weeks after her original arrest. She wasn't arrested after the Watergate arrest. Martha called up the UPI, Helen Thomas, from the hotel in Newport, California, and said, I'm sick and tired of politics. I gave John an ultimatum. I would leave him if he didn't get out. I'm a political prisoner. Politics is nothing but a cop and robber's game. I know dirty things. I saw dirty things. I'm not going to stand for the dirty tricks that go on. I was a patriot until I got assassinated. She used those words. What country can I go to? She asked. I'm sick and tired of the whole operation. They threw me down on a bed, she said, five men, and stuck a needle in my behind. A doctor stitched my fingers after the battle with the five guards. Martha's telephone was then bugged. She was when she called the UPI for help. Her room was entered. The phone was pulled from the wall. The silencing treatment began. A security agent from the committee to reelect the President Nixon gave Martha an injection in her behind, and a doctor, as I say, stitched up her finger. She next found herself in an apartment in New York, again calling the news media. They wanted to keep me here in California, and she ended up in the apartment of Mr. Marriott from the Nixon Committee, a devout organizer for the Republican Party. You may read his name recently. He has franchises for food on airplanes, airports, army bases, and just pushed out all the street vendors to get a monopoly of the bicentennial food distribution plan in Washington, D.C. on the anniversary of our bicentennial. Martha Mitchell never was allowed to return to her Washington apartment. She couldn't close it up, and she was sent to Marriott's apartment in New York. Patrick Gray III, the acting head of the FBI and formerly from the Justice Department, was staying at Newport at the same hotel as John Mitchell and Martha Mitchell when this was taking place. I wrote, it is little wonder that our FBI chief would not come to the aid of Mitchell's and to see what was making Martha prisoner. He was staying at the same hotel. A high summit meeting was held between John Mitchell and President Nixon. I went on to say neither the long hours of work nor the absence of John Mitchell from his family ever bothered Martha before the Watergate arrest. She made it known publicly she was angry when her husband gave up the job as the Attorney General. She wanted him to stay on as the Attorney General instead of head of the Election Committee. Was the discrediting of Martha Mitchell by Jack Anderson understandable when it became known that Frank Sturgis, one of the five men arrested at the Watergate, was a lifelong friend and source of information for Jack Anderson's career? John Mitchell resigned from the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon after Martha Mitchell's remarks were printed around the world that implicated him in this Watergate affair. The manner in which Martha was handled simply indicates how the fascist police agents are forced to treat any witness to their espionage acts. Parts of the invisible government were visible to Martha Mitchell, and she panicked. Martha has to be a political prisoner because she was a witness to some kind of dirty work. I wrote that in The Realist in July 1972, fully aware that that injection and the isolation of Martha Mitchell made her a political prisoner. In The Realist in 1973, at the height of the Watergate investigations, they took a recess in the summer, and I wrote for The Realist again, why is the Senate Watergate Committee functioning as part of the cover-up? And I went into the way the committee was asking questions, the wrong witnesses were on the stand, and they were doing exactly like the Warren Commission in calling the wrong witnesses, asking the wrong questions, changing the subject when the white witness was called, and so forth. I referred to the death and the threat of death that took place to the witnesses during this summer, the spring that the hearings were taking place. And then, of course, I went on to Martha Mitchell, the first and most important witness that should have been called and wasn't called, and therefore it indicated that the Senate, identical to the Warren Commission, didn't intend to want to know any information that Martha Mitchell had. I said the Senate committee is not interested in the jail, the local police, the CIA working with G. Gordon Liddy, Liddy was hurt in a prison fight the very night before he appeared before the grand jury, and G. Gordon Liddy has been silent ever since. E. Howard Hunt was beat up the night before his grand jury testimony in May 1973, and he also was beat up when he went to testify about the allegation that Charles Colson called him to go to Arthur Bremer's apartment. In fact, he was hurt so badly in his cell that his lawyers asked that the testimony, this testimony from the White House tapes, those allegations be erased the next day so that they wouldn't be part of the record, that he was supposed to go to Arthur Bremer's apartment before the FBI got in. I referred to the sabotaging of Dorothy Hunt's plane and how that silenced the other witnesses, and how James McCord said that he worked for the CIA long enough to know that he would be killed once he was sent to prison. Martha Mitchell was a witness, the first witness that should have been called. I listed four people who should have been called before the Senate Select Committee and never were. One was Martha Mitchell, one was Lewis Tackwood, the other was Tom Charles Houston, and the other one was William Sullivan of Division 5 of the FBI. About Martha Mitchell, I said, Martha Mitchell is the witness to be called. Who's afraid of Martha Mitchell? The White House document signed by President Nixon referred to an exhibiting a Gestapo mentality, and Senator Sam Ervin said this. Lewis Tackwood warned about a police squad in Los Angeles that linked to the CIA in the White House that wanted a Gestapo. Fascism isn't a piece of paper. The treatment of Martha Mitchell up to the present time exemplifies exactly what dictatorship is all about. The cover-up and refusal to insist on her telling her full story is identical to the Gestapo kangaroo courts in Germany. The Senate committee is protecting the guilty in California. After the arrest, she might have known who was involved in the cover-up. At least seven people directly involved in the Watergate entry were with the Mitchells in California. She was kidnapped, I said in the article. Serious charges were made about Martha Mitchell, about being kidnapped. She called for help. The phones were cut off. Only non-English people with her. She was forcibly detained while her husband went to Washington. She was not allowed to meet with any public officials after her kidnapping, after she was flown to Washington and couldn't return to her home. I referred to private armies inside the United States. That the White House hired private thugs to take care of demonstrators. They had unsalaried police. They had Steve King, who now works in the Department of Agriculture, I understand, who was to handle Martha Mitchell. She said there were five FBI men in the room. The hotel staff refused to be responsible. The FBI were the ones that came in, this private army, part of the FBI. She was assaulted. I listed kidnapping, private armies, assault, mental illness, bribery and blackmail, the use of safe houses, and how the law enforcement were protected. Herbert Kalmbach, Nixon's attorney, took Mrs. Mitchell to a hospital in California. Strangers were occupying her room. Her body was badly bruised in many places. Hospital records were not subpoenaed to see what care she required. Martha asked why the men who detained her were not arrested. Not only were not exposed, but promoted. Steve King, who did most of the damage, according to Martha Mitchell, became chief of security for the committee to reelect the president after James McCord was arrested. To this day, Martha Mitchell has been made to seem drunk, stupid, deranged. A psychiatric profile was made of her by the CIA, identical to what they did to Jim Garrison, the district attorney in New Orleans, or Dita Baer, who worked for IDT, or Marguerite Oswald. When certain persons know too much about government conspiracies, they then become discredited. I referred to bribery or blackmail. Martha Mitchell was offered $2 million for a book, and I knew this book would never come out. It would be embarrassing for the president, but for a short while, a certain amount of money was given to placate her and keep her quiet. And then John Mitchell recently cut off all funds to her, probably knowing she was going to die. She had a fatal cancer at the time that he cut off money for her food, electricity, and wheelchair. Martha couldn't go back to her Washington apartment after arrest. I wrote in 1973 she went back to the Marriott apartment in New York following disclosures of the deep involvement of high officials. There was no reason to dislodge this family in this election year when her husband would still be working with the president every day. Martha was removed from her daughter, Marty. She was moved from her husband, and then they shortly after filed for a divorce. But until the elections were over, she was sequestered in the apartment of the Marios. No testimony was taken from Martha Mitchell. She said she could name names. The phony investigators wanted her far removed. She will spoil the illusion of inquisitiveness. The real facts remain hidden in spite of the good TV show of the Senate Select Committee. I said, the FBI men are protected. Why were FBI men in her room? She hadn't done anything wrong at all. She simply happened to be out at a hotel when the major Watergate defendants, would-be defendants, appeared, and she knew who they were, and she knew who was involved. And so they made the decision that this one person had to be mutilated, injected, hospitalized, and transported, removed from her apartment, removed from her daughter, until this injection and these cancers could really take hold, like Jack Ruby, and then she would be safely out of the scene. Martha had not committed any crime of any sort. Martha said a room in California was filled with FBI agents. Did she mean L. Patrick Gray, acting director, or William Sullivan, or who else? And I mentioned that the guilty get promoted, such as Steve King, who was a former employer of Senator Gurney of Senate Select Committee, who was indicted for accepting money, illegal clandestine money in Florida. Steve King worked for him, and he was the man that Martha Mitchell had charged with injecting him. John Mitchell loved Steve King. He said he loved King like a son. He took on Steve King and dropped Martha and turned Martha's daughter against her. Martha Mitchell and James McCord were friends. McCord was in Mitchell's apartment at the Watergate Hotel, January 6, 1972. This is prior to the break-in. Creep paid $207 for technical inspection of their apartment. McCord was a bodyguard to Martha Mitchell. Allegedly, the fee was for smoke detectors in their apartment, but I'm sure that smoke detectors could be sounding devices that possibly came right from the Democratic headquarters up to John Mitchell's apartment. Martha would know if there were any listening devices in her apartment that would be picked up from the Democratic national headquarters, but Martha Mitchell was never allowed to speak on these matters. I think it's a terrible thing that Martha Mitchell is dead. I think it's a terrible thing that Dita Beard was removed from after the ITT scandal in April 1972 and taken to a hospital in Denver. We don't see her or hear about her. I think it's terrible that Patty Hearst is on the 9th floor or 20th floor of a federal hospital and now acting mute and will obviously have a bad condition, and her life has been affected by the way these people handled her and treated her, and we have no idea of what they're doing to her. Sentencing is being held up because she's down there, and goodness knows what's going to happen to Patty Hearst. I think it's terrible that Donald DeFries of the SLA was decapitated when his body was sent back for burial in Ohio. I think these things have to be answered by the people in power now. The thing that interests me is that the assassination of John Kennedy and the research of that assassination brings us right up to the present news and the present days and these illegal injections and psychosurgeries and the tampering with people's bodies and minds before death and after death. And we have to continue to ask every candidate running for election, whether it's the California Assembly or Washington House of Representatives or the Senate in your state or your senator in Washington, wherever you live, and the candidate for presidencies, you should confront them with these problems, because these are real problems, and find out how we can be protected, because you can be sure if these things are made to be given to Jack Ruby and Martha Mitchell, they're also produced for mass population. They're not just given to one or two people and then thrown away. Well, the JFK news is in the assassination, and we'll talk about that for the remaining 10 minutes. The story in the Sunday Chronicle yesterday, May 30, 1976, the JFK killing linked to the CIA in Cuba. Now, that's a big day for a researcher like myself, because we know that the CIA was linked to the killing of John Kennedy, but I don't believe I have yet read in a large newspaper. This came from the Chicago Sun-Times and also the Examiner Chronicle. I haven't yet seen this kind of material being made known in the major media in such a way. It's been many, many books written on the Kennedy assassination, but now Congress is getting to the nitty-gritty of warming up to this subject. The Warren Commission looked into the killing of Kennedy and covered it up in 1964. The Senate Select Committee had the links of the killing of Kennedy, the Dallas, right up to the Watergate crimes, and covered it 73 and 74. The Rockefeller Commission in 1975 had a second cover-up, third cover-up of the John Kennedy assassination, domestic CIA activities, and brought in Dick Gregory, who is not a researcher. He's a fine person, but they kept describing as a comedian and used David Bellin from the Warren Commission and covered up, again, any link of the killing of John Kennedy assassinations. They tried the House of Representatives, Pike's committee, to get a more larger view of that famous tip of the iceberg. It went into illegal CIA, FBI activities and barely touched on the JFK. They came up with a note Oswald allegedly wrote to James Hostie of the FBI, which I believe is a plant, a non-existent note. But the committee worked with a few falsified documents and closed fast and couldn't touch it. Senator Church's committee began to investigate some anti-Castro Cuban activity, and the killing of foreign leaders, as well as the Rockefeller committee. And he got a little whiff of the John Kennedy assassination because researchers were sending a massive amount of material, and he passed it on to another committee. Now Senator Schweiker is coming out, and there's a new intelligence report, which members of the committee, Senator Tower and Senator Goldwater, were afraid would open up more than they solve, and they're absolutely right. They've been getting us ready in the last several years, a year and a half, for the big story, and the big story can't hold back much longer. There are too many people working on it. There are too many people that know. And the National Security Council, the White House, if they have what is known as an executive action team, which they have admitted they've had to kill foreign dignitaries, then we have to make that one giant step over to our own continent and say, yes, they also killed a president, a senator, and many civil rights leaders, as well as hundreds of other people related to these events and who were witnesses or partaked in this crime that are now dead. The article in the paper, the Chicago Sun-Times, says that there's new evidence in a still-secret Senate report that has raised the possibility that anti-Castro Cuban groups, once supported by the CIA, may have been behind the assassination of President Kennedy. The new report will cast doubt on the Warren Commission's conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. It strongly suggests a Cuban connection. The bulk of the 170-page report deals with the anti-Castro group, possibly because they were operating in the United States. The report does not directly implicate the CIA. It implies that the anti-Castro group may have retaliated against Kennedy after he ordered the CIA to sever its ties, financial ties to them in 62. The CIA had been attempting to assassinate Castro. When the USSR agreed to withdraw missiles in Cuba, the USA promised to stop trying to overthrow Cuban Premier Fidel Castro. One of the key questions unanswered in all of this is how some of the anti-Castro groups managed to stay in existence and maintain their training camps long after they were cut off financially from the CIA. There's been speculation that the group received covert money from right-wing organizations or from the mafia. The Senate committee disclosed that mafia chieftains, anxious to reclaim their multi-million gambling and prostitution operations in Cuba, cooperated with the CIA to kill Castro. There will be a permanent new Senate Intelligence Committee after the November elections. One of the witnesses will be John Cohn, CIA director at the time, who denied that CIA and mafia had connections. He will be called to explain himself before the new committee. Now, this is a starting point. This isn't the end all. This is the starting point. They suggest that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone. The important point to remember as the next 4 or 5 years unfold is that Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill anybody. I've said it before on KLRB, and I say it many times at lectures at the colleges or wherever I speak. History will show you that Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill anybody. He didn't handle that rifle. It had no fingerprints. He didn't have any paraffin tests were negative on his cheek and hands to show that he hadn't fired a gun. That pristine bullet 399 could not have done the damage to John Kennedy and John Connally that the Warren Commission told you it could. That famous planted bullet 399 that was on a stretcher in Parkland Hospital. Oswald's rifle was ordered by somebody else and went to his post office box. It was placed behind stacks in the book depository. The picture of him holding that rifle was forged or planted at the chin. It was cropped at the chin. The shadows show the discrepancies over the head going straight down. The sun's under his nose, and where the rifle is shown, the sun is directly in front of him, and you see the rifle against the fence on Neely Street in the backyard apartment where the photograph could be taken while he was in New Orleans. A story that Oswald worked with the Cuban community, the Anti-Castro Cuban Committee, is absolutely true. He worked, he was made a patsy by the group, but he did work on Canal Street. His offices for Fair Play for Cuba backed up to the Anti-Castro Cuban Committee in New Orleans, where their offices met and were one. The Fair Play for Cuba pamphlets that Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly passed out in New Orleans in front of the trademark were paid for by a Mr. Osborne, and it was an Albert Osborne who sat on a bus going to Mexico City with Lee Harvey Oswald, who belonged to the private organization called Permandex with Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw was from New Orleans and worked with David Ferry and Jack Ruby and Oswald's double, Leon Oswald. The Oswald, who was with the anti-Castro Cubans, Lee Harvey Oswald, also was put in jail one night for an altercation in front of the trademark where he was photographed. He immediately called for the FBI man to come get him out of jail, and he was taken out of jail. That little altercation was photographed, allegedly to enhance his ability to get into Cuba, where he may have been able to play a role in the assassination of Castro or serve the CIA inside Cuba as his next assignment. He was a patsy. Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy. He did work with the anti-Castro Cuban community. There's no evidence in the 26 volumes and the archive documents in any piece of research that I've seen in 12 and a half years linking Lee Harvey Oswald to a Castro Cuban. But there's massive evidence of Lee Harvey Oswald working with the Central Intelligence and the CIA and the Castro anti-Castro community. But this is a beginning when the CIA is accused of having some private covert means of funding of right-wing organizations. Then you get into the chain of command of Mullen Associates, again named in Watergate, the office of where Robert Bennett was working. Mullen Associates formed the Free Cuban Committee, and that money went down to Raleigh Coffee Company, where Oswald worked and received paychecks while he was in the employ of Raleigh Coffee Company, but was not working for them, except on the payroll while he was in the New Orleans area. The Congressional Committee will get together, and we will flood them, the researchers, with more and more information. They already have information, I was told today, Senator Schweiker's committee, of exactly where the crossfire was at Dealey Plaza, where the men stood at the sewers, how they could effect this crossfire, and how the umbrella man, the famous umbrella man, could be the signal for the crossfire to take place. Washington will be literally flooded with more and more information linking Oswald to the intelligence community. I have an article coming out in 2 weeks, or 2.5 weeks, on Oswald downing the U-2 flight, that this was his role in the Soviet Union, and I'll go more into that next week and the week after. It's a national magazine, and it's a dynamite article, because the responsibility for the Kennedy assassination has to get away from Cuba or the anti-Castro Cubans. The actual planning of the crossfire, the triangulation, may have taken place in New Orleans and Mexico for what took place in Dallas, Texas, November 22, 1963. But the fact remains that Washington, D.C. has the total responsibility for the cover-up of the entire assassination and had to know. You couldn't be stupid on this. There were too many reasons to know that the Navy Intelligence, Central Intelligence Agency, and the FBI not only covered up the assassination of John Kennedy, but they were in the execution of it, and they went with the full knowledge of who Lee Harvey Oswald was at the time. Well, our time is up now. We have about a half a minute. I'm sorry about Martha Mitchell. I'm sorry about the injection. I didn't agree with her politically. I identify with her. I know that when the first person went off to a concentration camp in Germany, when the first person left their neighborhood and people didn't know where they went, when that first person disappeared or a car came and pulled them away, it didn't dawn on a lot of people that 80 million people were going to die in a war on the grounds of Europe in World War II. 80 million people displaced or killed. And when they do these things like Martha, and it's been going on a long time here, we better wake up and take account, because it's going to come down on us the same way. That's it for now. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.